We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello, I'm Maggie Doyle, and you're very welcome to a special Budget 2021 episode of the Your Politics podcast. Joining me this evening is Mary Regan, Paul Cunningham and David Murphy of our political staff. So it's just us. We're going to go through what is going to be spent, how it's all come out over the day. Started at about lunchtime today, but in reality it started a couple of days ago with all the various different little nuggets of information that we had about the budget. But Mary, first of all, the political landscape of this. We've got Fine Gael's Pascal Donoghue, used to giving budgets. You know, he's done a few now in his time, joined for the first time by a Fianna Fáil coalition partner in Michael McGrath. How did they both fare today?
Yeah, quite extraordinary when you stand back and think about it. I think it was a very big day for Michael McGrath. He's been giving the opposition a response speech to the budget for a number of years now. But when I think you look back at Fianna Fáil's last budget was 10 years ago. Today they're back in government delivering a budget again, this time in a coalition with Fine Gael and the Green Party, and this time in a completely different environment. And I think what a difference a decade makes. And Michael McGrath said in his budget speech that we don't have to look too far back to our history to find moments of great difficulty for this country. And I think he will know that just as much as anyone, because he was there as junior minister back in 2010, which was the absolute savage budget. If you think about it now, cuts to all sorts of welfare payments, including disability allowance, including carers allowance. And that was the budget that sort of marked the beginning of the end of Fianna Fáil's time in office. It was a moment in time, a time of austerity that changed the Irish political landscape, I think, and that change is still happening. And then here we are 10 years later, once again, Fianna Fáil in government delivering a budget at a time of economic shock. But I think the really telling thing is the difference in the response here. Back then, it was all about austerity. We had the economists, urging, we have to balance the books here. We had Europe, we had the Troika, and there was all this pressure coming on the government. And they were making these big, huge cuts, austerity measures, that really was really angering the public at the time, creating wounds that are still very deep and still the country is recovering from. But here the response is very different. A huge amount of borrowed cash. Pascal Donoghue said it's unprecedented in both size and scale, the biggest spending ever in history. And I think the lessons from austerity are all too familiar for all the political parties here. There's no going back. But then we have to wonder, is this sowing seeds for problems down the future, because we also know excessive borrowing creates its own difficulties. And Pascal Donoghue was really keen to stress in his budget that this sort of borrowing, the books will be balanced, the deficit will be brought down in the years ahead. So that just leaves us with this enduring question, the big what if, once we get out of this pandemic next year, if we do or if we don't, if the restrictions on businesses continue and yet the government can't continue to borrow the way it does, then where does that leave us?
So in general, you would say that the two of them together, they worked quite well together, because obviously you work on a budget for quite a long time before you deliver it. But the two of them seem to get on quite well, actually, because as people, as individuals.
If you look back to the start of this coalition when it was formed, and, there was various people not sure about how it would work, and everyone is pointing to the budget, or will they get through the budget? That's when all the hard stuff is going to come, especially for the Green Party. And you remember some Green Party TDs abstaining in government votes, and that raised questions, oh, can they stay the course of the budget? But the coalition have really stuck together through this. It was interesting that I think the first press release really came commenting on the budget came from the Greens' Nasa Harrigan. I think that was done deliberately to settle the nerves of the Green Party, to show that it's united. And then between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, we saw all these lovely pictures being tweeted of the Minister for Public Expenditure and the Finance Minister, Pascal Donoghue, and Michael McGrath, the chuckle brothers of this budget, how well they were getting on. And also during budget times, and particularly for coalitions, you hear, oh, you know, this party has won concessions, this party has won, or this minister has gone in and this minister has won and this minister has lost out. Really, there's enough to go around for every department this time around. And those sort of departments have been used to, in the past number of years, trying to find little cuts here and there, which often leaves sort of landmines in their wake. They didn't really have to do this time around, because every government department this time around has an increase in spending, and that certainly makes things easier. And I think for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, this will be the easiest budget they put together in this coalition. I'm not sure it's going to be so easy in the years to come.
The next time around. David Murphy, you've covered a lot of budgets in your time.
This 27.
This is 27?
Yeah.
Wow. This is the biggest budget ever in terms of cash that's going to be on the table and that's going to be spent by the government. Just talk about the macroeconomics of all of this, because I know that Roisin Shortall, when I was looking at the opposition response, she seemed to be one of the only opposition parties anyway that sort of, you know, understood and mentioned that this is all about the lending rules from the ECB. So it's about the European money that's coming in that we're going to be able to keep on borrowing.
Yeah, in a way, like the one person who the politicians today didn't give credit to is the person who made all of this possible, who is Christine Lagarde, head of the European Central Bank, someone who has been to Dublin during our own financial crisis and had drinks with Michael Noonan and Donnie and Nesbitt's and knows Dublin well. But in reality, what's going on here is we've entered a topsy-turvy world of economics. Normally, when you borrow more, your interest rates go up. And that is one of the rules. It's like gravity, and it's very difficult to change unless you start printing money and effectively putting more money into circulation and changing the fundamentals. And so last week, something extraordinary happened. The Irish government went out and they borrowed 1.5 billion euro. And in relation to about a billion of that money, what happened was the lenders paid the money to borrow, to lend money to Ireland. In other words, they had a negative interest rate. So they're going to lend money to Ireland and get back a little bit less than they've actually lent, which is an extraordinary situation. And that's due to the unusual activities of the European Central Bank. Now, Mary was talking about the huge amounts of money that we're borrowing. But when you're borrowing money, there's how much is the first question, and also when. The when being, when do you have to repay it? Now, Ireland has managed also to borrow money in terms of longer term borrowings at about 15 years and only pay an interest rate of 0.05%. In other words, nothing. Mm-hmm. So in that scenario, if they're able to do this kind of financing where they're borrowing on the long term and you don't have to worry about it for about 15 years or so, by that time, the idea is that the economy will have grown so much that these borrowings aren't going to be such a headache. And if they can continue doing that kind of thing, that's obviously the pathway they're looking at. Interesting that Pascal Donoghue was giving a nod towards maybe having to concentrate about how they're going to deal with all of this spending and how they're going to try and rein it in towards the end of next year. And at some point, the pressure will come on to balance the books. That's when things are going to get really difficult
so
for the Irish government.
So it could be that budget 2022 is the one that hits us hard.
Well, you see, that's really an interesting question, because certainly they've outlined that they're going to run a deficit of something in the region of 19, 20 billion euro for next year. And also Pascal Donoghue said today that they will really deal with the question of when they're going to balance the books when they deliver their medium-term strategy. But he said the medium-term strategy is going to be published next year. So he's actually pushed out the question of when they're even going to say to the markets and say to the public and say to the voters, this is when we're going to balance the books.
But isn't that understandable, considering that when he started it, he said, look, this is based on COVID-19, dealing with the issues that COVID-19 pandemic have thrown up, and that half of the budget is actually spending on those particular issues. So isn't it a case of we're in a holding pattern until we get through this pandemic, and then we can see how we get on? And
we are in a holding pattern.
We're sort of hoping that it will be next year.
We've got to remember one thing, and they gave some interesting figures regarding what the debt's going to be. It's going to be in the region of 220 billion euro. And you can look at the Irish economy in various ways, but one way in which you can look at it, which measures its activity, it says the Irish economy is worth around 200 billion euro. So in other words, what you're always trying to do with an economy is to make sure that the debt is about the same size or less than the size of the entire economy. And in this case, the debt is, roughly speaking, going to be 10% larger than the economy. So that's already a kind of an amber warning sign for you, okay? Second issue is they're going to have a few more years of this big deficit scenario. And then the third element of it is you've got to remember that when we went into this, we went into it with a very, very large sum of debt. And that was an overhang from the financial crisis, bailing out the banks, and the fact that we were spending more than we were taking in. So at some point when gravity returns, what we'll find is that there's a whole bunch of countries who've borrowed an awful lot of money, and the markets are going to begin to look at them differently. And in that context, the European Central Bank only has one job, and its one job is guard against inflation. And if we see inflation return in Europe, all this kind of funny stuff they're doing, stuff like going into the markets and buying all these additional bonds and printing all this money, all the funny stuff they're doing, that will come to a very abrupt halt. And they'll say, we've got to tackle inflation because that is our number one job. And when that happens, that's when you could see interest rates begin to creep up. And if Ireland find themselves a little bit outside the whole herd of European countries, that's when it could all get a bit difficult.
Okay. But we'll be okay, won't we? Because haven't we got a rainy day fund to sort everything out?
Well, it's funny you mentioned the rainy day fund.
We've got a little piggy bank somewhere, haven't we?
Yeah. Well, look, I guess if you've got a global pandemic, and I know you can't really laugh about these things, but, you know, it is aptly named and it's certainly raining in terms of the economics of all of this. So what happened last week was that we saw Pascal Donoghue say, we've got €1.5 billion in the rainy day fund. You know, obviously the country's in significant difficulties, like all the other countries that are battling with COVID. So now is the time to use the rainy day fund. We're going to use that money. The interesting thing was that the following day, so he pencil marked all that money and he said, we're going to use that for the budget. And then the following day, the National Treasury Management Agency, the ETFIT, which borrows on behalf of Ireland, they went into the markets and lickety-split, they had borrowed another €1.5 billion in just a few hours and paying hardly any interest, as I mentioned. So we'll see how long the kind of topsy-turvy world of economics of COVID-19 lasts.
So the rainy day fund is gone, but it's lash and rain, so we don't mind so much.
Well, look, there's no doubt about the fact no one questioned whether or not we should have used it now. And I think that goes to the heart of the difficulty that Ireland and all these other countries face. And that's what the politicians are going to be grappling with. I mean, they may have got away with a budget which probably has addressed the main points in terms of trying to reflate the economy and help the damaged parts of the economy and keep things on life support. I don't think they'd any other option in this case.
Okay. Mary, we'll ask David to leave now. We'll get Paul Cunningham to come in. He's going to talk to us about some of the opposition party reaction. But Mary, you know, it's not just the pandemic. They've also got to look at Brexit coming down the line as well. So there was two different things. And certainly when Pascal Donoghue stood up today, he said the country has faced numerous difficulties since independence, but never one like COVID-19.
Yeah. He said now is not a time for optimism. And I think he could have started and finished his speech with those words. Yeah, certainly not a time for optimism, because this budget was framed with the assumption of COVID continuing into next year and there being no vaccine. And if that wasn't bad enough, it was also framed with the assumption of no Brexit trade deal. So that is the backdrop. So, I mean, either one of those on their own would have been enough of an issue to have to grapple with. But, you know, I think in some ways it's a really strange atmosphere around this budget, because it does have the atmosphere of those gloomier days and that sense of uncertainty. But then on the other hand, it is the big sort of giveaway, but we certainly don't have the feel-good factor that comes with it. And I think this budget ultimately might pass an awful lot of people by, because there is no major tax changes, there's no big changes in terms of core social welfare payments. And, you know, those kind of budget calculators that they do after budget day, where you see how much poorer or richer you are, or those sort of little layouts they do in the newspapers where you see the family of three kids and two parents and one working.
What it means, yeah.
And it's this family is a €5 poorer, this family is €10 richer. I don't think really it's making a difference in terms of people's everyday life in that sense. It's more of a sort of sectoral approach, very much based on helping out sectors of the economy in the hope that when we start to come out of this, the other side, that there will be
restaurants, bars there for people, because there is a sense, economists will tell you, that there is pent up demand. There is money. There's people still earning. There is people that have money that they haven't been spending maybe, and they will be there ready, but they need the businesses there to spend their money on when they open the other side. And that is why you see these measures such as the VAT for the hospitality sector, such as these income support for companies who've lost money as a result of COVID-19, who'll avail of this grant up to €5,000 a week. So I think that's the whole point there, that the economy is ready to go, hopefully, if and when we get to the other side of this.
Okay. Paul Cunningham's popped into the studio now. Paul, Mary was just saying there, you know, not a huge amount, I suppose, in a way, for people to complain about. The opposition parties watching them all stand up and take their 45 minutes of time in the dole after the ministers delivered the budget. It was interesting because it did actually appear like that. Like some of the kind of independent rural TDs, for example, you know, there's a lot of money going in, for example, for core capital investment into the construction of roads all around the country: Donegal, Sligo, Mayo, the Dunkettle Interchange in Cork. And there's also funds as well to buy more rail carriages. But what about the green aspect to all of this? Are there issues that they're going to be concerned about when it comes to carbon tax?
Yeah. Well, the first thing, I'm not sure if I'm qualified to speak here, given 27 budgets. Murphy was sitting in this very
stage. How many budgets
just a few
have you got
ago.
Under your belt?
Too many. Right. I was just thinking, if 27 budgets, you know, go back 27 years, he was probably 21 or 22
probably.
Around that time.
Child.
So a roundy birthday.
Yeah.
You know, must be in the office somewhere. But being serious, I think when it comes to the question of the greener tinges of the budget, from the Green Party's perspective, what they want to try and do is to broaden it. So at the moment, the green impact is viewed as relating to motoring, carbon tax, VRT, sort of one place where taxes did actually go up, fuel to go up later in the year so we get through the winter at least. And they want to try and sort of portray it as something more than that. So, for example, in transport, €1 billion going into transport for metro, for DART extension, for walkways, for greenways, all that type of stuff as well. Catherine Martin also pointing to her budget for the arts, a huge big budget for the Arts Council.
€50 million Euros for live entertainment, which is an industry on its knees.
And when it comes to the bad bits, the old tax hikes and all the rest of it, they're able to say, well, listen, this is not just the Green Party arguing for it. If you remember, there was a whole Rock the Stone committee who came up with a report, and while Sinn Féin and People Before Profit Solidarity walked away from the carbon tax aspect of it, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Labour, Greens all went with it. So they want to sort of, if you can imagine it, put it this way, sort of spread the blame when it comes to the tax hikes, but also point out that they're a party broader than that and have achieved some victories. I think Mary's absolutely right that early press release from Nessa Hourigan was interesting. There was a question in everyone's mind, was anyone to go over the top on this one? And it hasn't happened. So there's cohesion there within the government. And I felt that was a problem for the opposition because, as you say, they were speaking for 45-minute blocks. And much of the argument you heard today was an argument you would have heard before the budget was announced. So, for example, you know, Social Democrats talking about testing and tracing, Sinn Féin talking about hospital capacity,
ICU
beds and all the rest of it.
Which you're right, we've been hearing about that for
weeks.
Or
even on the non-COVID side as well. And the housing, we don't believe delivery is going to be achieved. On Sláintecare from Social Democrats saying we haven't seen that move from hospitals to GPs and care in the community. From the Labour Party talking about the question of social welfare and how people had been sort of left behind and needed to do more to help the weakest in society, particularly in low-paid workers and workers' rights in the hospitality sector. So much of that debate is stuff we've heard before, because there wasn't any surprise in this budget at all, because we knew what was going
to
come.
I want to talk to you about housing, because some people are commenting on our Facebook page, which you can do if you're on our Facebook page. So it's RTE News at Facebook. You can write comments as we're broadcasting here this evening, and keep your comments coming if you wish. But with the housing budget, and my mind has gone blank now as to who it was. I think it was maybe Piers Doherty for Sinn Féin was saying, no, actually, it was Pat or Tobin for AIM2 was saying, look, you know, the money isn't there. You're saying that you want to build X amount of units for this amount of money. So is housing still a very big issue? And then, of course, there was the caveat that if lockdowns continue, construction industry stops, the housing numbers, that there still won't be enough units built.
Yeah, there's sort of multiple angles to this. On the one hand, from the government's point of view, what they were trying to do was to effectively insulate the economy from from the flames of COVID, but also to prepare against possible outcomes in Brexit, while at the same time, and this is the pertinent point, begin to make progress on issues which had been at the core of the election campaign just a few months ago, like housing. So if you look at it from the government side or the government's perspective, they say if you look at the number of houses that were built in 2019, it was only around 6,500. Fewer will be built this year because of COVID. And now they're planning on having 9,500 social houses. So you're seeing a 50% increase. And this is dramatic. And the money's there. And the Department of Housing has got more money than ever before. But before that had even been read out in the budget. Sinn Féin's Eoin O'Brien, their housing spokesperson, was calling it out and saying these statistics don't stand up. It is not going to be delivered. There isn't the capacity there. And you know what? Only 600 more than what was the allocation for the year is actually going to be delivered on. So once again, you had that powwow on housing. I think what was different in this budget as opposed to the last budget was a big thing from Fianna Fáil's point of view is to say there is a strategic change in the approach to housing. It's no longer just being left to the private sector. We're going to build. And it's on that that the party's record is going to stand. Do they build or don't they build? Because that's what the minister says he's going to do. That's what Michael McGrath said they were going to do. And if they don't do it, well, then that's their tough.
Yeah, and I think on a wider political issue, this is really interesting, the increased their increase in public spending. So forget about COVID, if there was never a pandemic, or if we could forget about it for a minute, and you just think back to the general election, as Paul mentioned, there was, you know, a message coming from the electorate that they wanted more state intervention, more state investment in areas like health and housing in particular. And then the pandemic came, and then the government had to do it almost as a sort of emergency situation, particularly when it came to health. So I think that expectation is there now from citizens that the state can act in certain areas. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether this is something that will endure beyond COVID-19, because, you know, will this be a shift in state policy in terms of public spending?
And it feels that health is still definitely, obviously we're still in the pandemic, but health was an issue for the opposition parties. I heard quite a few different politicians stand up and say, you know, about the private hospitals, for example, you know, and what's this two-tier system, Sláinte Care again being mentioned by Roisin Shortall, Richard Boyd Barrett standing up and saying, you know, we need to buy the private hospital so that we have the capacity. And that issue is still very much here. I know we've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks, but it's the current issue, and it's definitely what we're going to be talking about for the next couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, once again, if you look at the whole budget, 50% was basically going on COVID related issues. If you look at the health budget, it's going to get 4 billion. How much is going on COVID related? 2 billion. So therefore, you're also looking at 1.6 billion then going on extra hospital and staff. Some of that was already planned, but what they're saying is they're trying to get on top of some of the legacy issues, which date back to the area that Mary was talking about, the recession, when there were all of those cutbacks. So it is very much a live issue. And one of the questions which was being put by opposition is that if you believe that when it comes to COVID, one of the key concerns is the question of our hospitals becoming sort of flooded with COVID cases and not being able to sort of cope to it, why isn't there more of an emphasis on that? If test and tracing is the issue and the answer for us to live with COVID-19, why didn't you prioritise that? And so I think that has been an argument we've heard since this government was formed, and after this budget, we'll be hearing it again.
Mary, both ministers said this budget, they wanted to instill hope. Do you think they did that today?
Well, yeah, I mean, there might have been something reassuring about this budget in some ways, in the sense that, you know, they haven't gone down the austerity route, as we mentioned before. Their response is to borrow and invest in the areas in the hope that there's something there on the other side of it. But, you know, I mean, it's customary, I think, for the past decade at least. I think I've covered 12 budgets for something to become undone in the 24, 48 hours afterwards. And maybe this time the hope is the thing that will become undone. I mean, the word, I think, was used three or four times at least in Pascal Donoghue's speech, at least probably equaled by Michael McGrath. And, you know, they need to give that message. But there was also a public health message, bizarrely, you know, at the end of Pascal Donoghue's speech, saying that, you know, we have to do this collectively together in the hope that things, you know, get better the other side. So
we live in hope.
Do you remember that, like, that Salvador Dali's image Dreams, where you've got this little character suspended on all these tiny little sticks? And to a certain extent, that's what I think we are. We're continuing in this area of suspension. And I think that to a certain extent, that's understandable until we know how long COVID's going to last.
Not puppetry, Paul. You're talking...
Of course. No. Okay, yes, so as a society, we're sort of hanging there,
waiting to see
how long does COVID last? What is the bill going to be? And on the basis of that, then being able to take real deep decisions about how you're going to get out of it. And that's notwithstanding what David was mentioning earlier, where the markets move in and just have one look at Ireland and saying, don't like the look of that.
Yeah.
And the interest rate starts to spike.
You know, fortunately, we've also got to turn an eye over that way to Westminster, because Brexit as well is coming down the line. And there's all sorts of different timelines now coming up before Christmas about the different talks that are ongoing between the EU.
I think, you know, it was pretty clear that, you know, from what Pascal Donoghue had said and Michael McGrath, that they're factoring in a no-deal Brexit. So this budget is predicated on that outcome. We know already that if it is going to be a deal, it's going to be a very thin deal. And if it doesn't happen at all, negotiations will at some time reassume or reassert, and you will have sector-by-sector deals. But basically, the whole thing is just going to drag on. And we know that the central bank has factored in sort of a certain amount of loss. The economy thinks around 2.5% contraction in the event of a no-deal Brexit. But certain sectors will be hit harder, namely agriculture and food production. So there's an awful lot we know about it. But I don't think anyone's hanging their hat on a deal and then some great outcome. It's just going to be bad or less bad.
If I was to put you on the spot and ask you for one word to describe Budget 2020, what would you both say? Mary first. Paul. Put Mary. Paul, who's going to go first?
Continuation.
Mary.
Just strange.
Strange. There you go. So suspended in some sort of puppetry, Salvador Dali-esque and a bit strange. That was your special version of the Your Politics podcast for Budget 2021. Thanks very much for joining us. And join us again on Thursday. We'll be back with maybe a normal Your Politics podcast. We'll still be talking about the fallout of Budget 2021, of course. But for me, Maggie Doyle, Mary Regan, Paul Cunningham and David Murphy, thanks for listening.